And ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagman & Hagman Report for today. It is Friday, August 15th, 2014. It is a follow-up Friday. I think from now on we're going to have follow-up Fridays. It sounds like a plan. I'm Doug Hagman, co-host with my son Joe Hagman. Together we are the Hagman & Hagman Report, fellow investigators, researchers, talk show hosts. Folks, you're in for an incredible three-hour program, I believe, anyway. We've got a lot of information to provide to you. You're listening to the only show where the news is presented to you in 3D. You look well beyond the headlines and the bylines and the fog of disinformation, as I like to say, to bring you the news that's really behind the news that's pushing the news. We broadcast live each and every weeknight from 8 to 11 p.m. Eastern. You can find us on the Internet at two places now. Our article home base, if you will, is HomelandSecurityUS.com. Those are where the investigative reports come from. That's HomelandSecurityUS.com. The other, where the show information originates, is HagmanAndHagman.com. That's HagmanAndHagman.com. Two N's on the word Hagman. If you've already got our home site, HomelandSecurityUS.com bookmark, look on the right-hand side. There's a link directly to HagmanAndHagman.com. I will be putting a lot more data, a lot more information, guest information, books, links to websites there over the weekend. It's going to be an incredibly huge site by the time it's said and done. I want to thank Troy for allowing us to broadcast on the Christians United Broadcasting Network there. You can tune us in at the Hagman and HagmanReport.com. That's an audio channel, the Hagman and HagmanReport.com. Thanks for joining us today, folks. Thank you for your belief and your trust in us as we walk through this minefield of current events. Tomorrow, for the weekend edition, what a fantastic lineup we have for you. I would say, well, just go over to Hagman and HagmanReport.com and look at the lineup for tomorrow, but I'll tell you. We're going to have on, Sheila Zielinski will be the primary host of the weekend report. We're going to be having on Chuck Baldwin, author of Romans 13. We're going to be having on Ben Swan. Folks, you know Ben Swan. Talked to him this morning, great guy. And also about 45 minutes worth, roughly give or take, of Gerald Celente tomorrow. That's the weekend edition. Excited about that, folks. Now, for tonight, just want to say this. We had a pretty full week this week. We had Nathan Leal on last night, of course, and we had Sandeo on Tuesday. We had Pastor Langford and Steve Quayle on as well. And one thing I want to mention is we've got some unfinished business to take care of. Okay, now, Joe, am I hearing things? Is there...
No, you must have something going in the computer, because I hear it too, but I hear it very faintly.
All right. Hold on, folks. Some of these
websites have, I don't know if you've noticed, have updated where all these ads were popping up now. That's one thing, folks.
There we go. That's one thing. I'll say this. I will never, ever have a website or be superintendent of a website that has these automatic audio come on and video things come on. That just drives me absolutely batty. This being a follow-up Friday, let me just explain this real quickly. Joe will be getting in news for the first hour. The second hour, I've asked, because of what Nathan Leal had said and because of some developments, I think it's very important to understand what's really taking place here. You know, the second hour, I've asked to be joined by W for for as long as possible. And here's the reason. Folks, this weekend, Obama is flying back from his vacation to Washington, D.C. He's expected to return to the White House on Sunday. But it's interesting because no one is saying why he's taking this unusual and costly, I might add, trip back to Washington. Now, think about Nathan Leal for a moment, what he had said yesterday. And this is all going to connect together, and this is why I asked W to come on, because he's got specific information about this in particular.
Yeah, we touched on it yesterday briefly, but he is in Martha's Vineyard right now on a vacation.
Correct. Now, Obama is the 44th president. We know that. Well, he's the 44th man. He's considered the 44th president. I personally have not seen verification of his identity to make him the president, but people call him the 44th president. His number is 44. Based on my research and my inquiries, which go well beyond what the Hill's reporting and other websites are reporting, guess how long Obama will be staying in town?
I haven't seen it, but 4 hours?
44 hours, roughly.
So he'll be there Sunday till Tuesday?
Correct. Now,
that's different than what was being reported yesterday for a quick stop and turnaround, like he forgot his phone type deal, as they were reporting.
Right. And you've got to ask yourself why. Why would he come back? Because no one's talking. And it's interesting because of, there are other numbers that coincide with his visit. There's a lot of occult numerology going on right now, and a lot of things, folks, that frankly, the deeper I get into this, the more questions I have, the more everything seems like it's not a coincidence, and we'll be talking about that deeply in the second hour, things that you need to know and that are far beyond anything coincidental. And it might, we need to have this discussion for a couple of reasons. The biggest reason is, I believe, it's going to at least raise awareness of this occult numerology and what playbook they're using. And from that, we could perhaps extrapolate their objectives, agenda, and even to the extent of perhaps identifying the real bad players here, okay, based on occult numerology and what's going on. I'm not saying we've got all the answers, but what I'm saying, after you hear what will be disclosed during the second hour, I think you'll have, I think it'll make you pause and say, wait a minute, this is not right. So I'm looking forward to that. Pray, ladies and gentlemen, for a good, solid connection. Pray over our technology. Pray over that we can, in fact, have this discussion. It's an important one, very important one. And this does involve the number 44, the number 216, the number 17, all over the place. And it's kind of a secret handshake sort of club deal thing going on. And you'll better understand it when we discuss it during the second hour. But this hour, I'll lead this off, and then I'll turn it back to Joe. Joe sent me this. It's interesting. Senate report. Isn't this interesting? 15 Libyan sources killed for Benghazi investigation since killed. A delayed Senate report released this past week regarding the Benghazi attacks argued an FBI investigation has been weakened by the deaths of a number of cooperating Libyan sources. Isn't this not coincidental? You know, you look at Hillary Rodham Clinton as Secretary of State. You look at Obama as the individual in the Oval Office. You look at Brennan as the Islamic Muslim CIA chief. And you can't tell me for one moment that John O'Brien did not is not either a full-fledged Muslim or an Islamic sympathizer, given his history. But the fact of the matter is, the truth about Benghazi, should it come out via the Trey Gowdy Commission, the Benghazi Select Committee, which it's interesting because that committee is peppered by people who were on the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. Should the truth come out that we were being baited into World War III and obviously arming the anti-Assad rebels, of course, there will be more than impeachments, and there will be criminal trials. It'll make Watergate and Iran-Contra look like a, well, it'll look like a Sunday school picnic. But isn't it interesting? 15 potential witnesses have assumed room temperature.
Yeah,
coincidence, I think not.
Libyan witnesses, but nonetheless, 15 cooperating Libyan sources are no longer available to assist the investigation because they are now dead. The report goes on to say it's unclear whether the killings have anything to do with the investigation by the U.S. Well, we know that answer to that already, and this is not a coincidence. This is all part of what they need to do to make sure that their narrative stays and remains the one that people listen to. Now, we talked about this Benghazi committee by Terry Gowdy's ahead of this investigation, and do we think it's going to yield any meaningful results? We have a presidential election coming up where Hillary Clinton is looking to be the number one or number two Democratic front runner. I guess you could have to call her a front runner. I don't know anybody else who's thrown their hat in the ring on the Democratic side saying they're going to run, but her time at the secretary, as the head of the Secretary of State, has really, or should really, poison any chance of her becoming a even a choice or a part of a choice for the presidency in 2016. And she came out with a new book recently, and I just saw this article on Drudge. Ben Carson, he's an outspoken doctor. His book overtakes his book One Nation overtakes Hillary Clinton's Hard Choices in total sales today. That's got to speak volumes to the Democratic Clinton 2016 team. She was paid $14 million for her book in an advance. And Ben Carson's book, you know, relatively unknown, is overtaking hers now in the store. So that's got to be, like I said, a big red flag to those looking at the next election, because you look at the money put into the marketing, you look at the money put into the advance that she got, and they expected a lot more from her book. So, you know, Americans are disinterested in her. Are they angry at her? Do they even care? And that is a question I think we'll be talking a lot more about her as the next few years roll by. But if you want to start with the news, I have a report that, and I wanted you to.
Oh, you mentioned something about I want to say William Jefferson Clinton, but Hillary Clinton. Hillary Clinton.
What's the difference?
Being the front runner, nothing actually. If you look at the Clintons, they've never left power outside of D.C. And one thing that I found extremely important that for people to really understand, and some people will call this a conspiracy nonsense. And I had a good conversation with Ben Swan talking about conspiracy theories and such, and a very well-grounded man in terms of investigative journalism. And he said, look, you know, a lot of these, we shouldn't even call them conspiracy theories because they're not. And journalists follow these conspiracies and investigate conspiracies. They analyze the conspiracies. It's interesting. But look at Hillary Rodham Clinton, front runner. If you look at the lineage of all 43, all 43 previous presidents, look at the lineage of all of them. Who is Hillary Clinton, Hillary Rodham Clinton? Well, she's married to William Jefferson Clinton. Bill Clinton was born in Arkansas. He became the governor of Arkansas. Most people think him to be, by the way, the illegitimate son of who? Rockefeller. Many believe it was Winthrop Rockefeller who fathered him. And if you recall, right before William Jefferson Clinton's mother died, she was at the racetrack and really spouting off a lot of, she was very, very upset that she was not, there was a lot of, she was upset because of the lack of recognition and how she really was being treated by the Rockefeller clan. So there was trouble in paradise there. You got to know, you got to figure that, you know, little boys from Arkansas just don't grow up to be president of you know, the United States without some connections going for them. Winthrop Rockefeller, as a matter of fact, does appear to be Bill Clinton's father. And if that's the case, think about the Illuminati influence in the White House. We already have it now, but think about the Hillary Rodham Clinton. We saw advancements, especially in the banking sector under William Jefferson Clinton. What would a Hillary Rodham Clinton administration look like? Just want to throw that in there while you were talking about Hillary Rodham Clinton being the front runner. Go ahead and move on.
Yeah, and I don't know if you saw this report. There's a on Blacklist News a report written by Paul Craig Roberts. Washington has placed the world on the road to war. And it says a fabricated report was spread by the UK Guardian newspaper and BBC that a Russian armed convoy entered Ukraine and was destroyed by the Ukrainian military. Now, did you see that initial report about the Russian convoy?
Right. Right. It was on MSNBC, and it was on MSNBC, and I think CNN ran a portion of this. And that was earlier today. It was earlier this afternoon.
Well, it goes on to say that the German media, including Die Welt, picked up the false report and spread the hysteria. Once again, there's confirmation that the Western media is corrupt and unreliable. The drums for war are being loudly beaten in Washington, European capitals, and the prostitute Western media. And it goes on to say, cite a headline, NATO is desperate for war. This time the target is Russia, a major nuclear power.
And you know, they tried to get us in war in Syria. They almost succeeded four times. And, of course, the chemical weapons. Let me tell you a secret, folks. Hey, I'm going to look at the chat room here. I don't usually look at the chat room. I'm going to look at the chat room. I got two questions for the chat room. One is a housekeeping question. I've sent out a lot of bumper stickers. Have y'all gotten them? Those who wanted them, have you gotten them?
I've gotten a lot of emails, too, about that, Ed, and a lot of thank yous. I guess I should start forwarding them to you.
Okay. All right. Well, I just want to make sure the smaller 3-inch round stickers are kind of very subtle. You know, you can put them somewhere, and they're kind of like a wink and a nudge. Hey, I'm a listener. So if you're driving down the road, you see it. We also got in 4x6 ovals, you know, the European kind, with our with the same logo. In fact, if you go on HagmanandHagman.com, you can actually see the exact size logo. But that was just a question for the chat. Okay. What were we talking about?
We were talking about the report of the Ukraine military destroying a Russian convoy of aid,
okay,
and how NATO
right.
is desperate for war with Russia.
Okay. The two questions I had, that was the first question. The second question is, remember Syria being accused of gassing, using chemical weapons, specifically gas, to bring in NATO? Do you recall that, folks, in the chat room? What type of gas was that? Does anyone recall? I'm looking at the chat just to see if...
I can't recall. Off the top of my head, I want to say sarin gas, but I don't think that's correct.
VX. It was VX gas.
Okay.
As well. Okay. There was more than one gas. That's the secret, folks. There was more than one gas being used there. There's more than one gas.
There's a report. Nasrallah, Syria war prepared us for the next round with Israel. Hezbollah chief calls Islamic State a monster threat for the region. Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah, Nasrallah has called for the Sunni Islamic State group a monster of an organization whose recent growth and expansion is worrying. Nasrallah warned in an interview that the Lebanese newspapers published Friday that the Islamic State, which controls a large swath of territory straddling Syria and Iraq, where it is accused of perpetrating atrocities, presented a danger that does not differentiate between Shiite, Sunni, Christian, Druze, Yazidi, or Arab. The monster is growing all the time. The numbers of fighters and the abilities of the Islamic State's disposal are great and mighty. This worries everyone, and everyone should be worried, he said. He goes on to talk about the dangers of what is happening in the Arab world, and we have reports now that the U.S. conducts new airstrikes as ISIS kills 90 Yazidis in an Iraqi town. These are the people that were up on the mountain that we dropped aid for. The U.S. military conducted new airstrikes against Islamic militants Friday, a source told Fox News. Members of the group killed 90 male members of Iraqi's Yazidi minority in a northern village and kidnapped dozens of women and children. The Kurdish-speaking ethnic and religious group, which numbers in the hundreds of thousands in Iraq, has been persecuted in the north by the Islamic State militants, with at least 500 killed prior to Friday's news, according to Iraqi's human rights minister. The U.S. military said in a statement Friday after receiving the reports of the civilian deaths, U.S. forces conducted airstrikes on the Islamic vehicles in the village of Kawaju. The village is located south of the village of Sinar. Militants arrived in vehicles as they started their killing this afternoon, according to senior Kurdish officials. We believe it's because of their creed, convert or be killed.
Well, I got to say this. This was about a week ago. And now, I'll bring you up to speed, but about a week ago, ISIS overran Iraq's largest Christian town. I call it Qarakash. Now, I don't know how you pronounce it over there in Iraq. It's Qaraqosh. I call it Qarakash. So here's the issue. There were about 40,000 trapped Yazidi people atop the Sinjar Mountains of northern Iraq. However, there was this other area, the city overrun, known as Qarakash, known to be Iraq's largest Christian city. The ISIS fighters pushed back Kurdish troops from the city and captured several Christian towns, including that in that region. Now, it's located between Mosul, which has been under ISIS control now for the past few months, and Arbil, which is really the Kurdish capital, I suppose you can call it that. It's got a population of around 50,000, mostly composed of Christians. And here's the problem, or here's the latest. You might think that the Yazidis are the only important, or the only place where there's a problem. There's a relief organization right now that's very active in that Qarakash area. It fell to ISIS. What ISIS is doing, and this is so unpleasant, they're systematically beheading Christian children. They're raping the women, beheading the children. They're drinking the children's blood. They're eating, yes, eating, cannibalizing, I suppose, is a better way of saying it. The people, the Christians, they are crucifying Christians. And on HomelandSecurityUS.com, Catherine Crable, a contributing author for Homeland Security, wrote an article.
Great article.
Yeah. Please, ladies and gentlemen, spread that article around. We're not looking for the PR. Catherine Crabill is a great writer in her own right. She wrote this and explains the situation with respect to the Christian plight. So dead on accurate with respect to that article. So just if you go to HomelandSecurityUS.com, just share that on Facebook so people know that the crisis is not over. It's horrible. It's horrible.
And I'll put that link in the chat room for people so they have it here. Another interesting article, or not article, I guess this is a Department of Homeland Security release that I saw that caught my attention, which I really wanted to get into. Department of Homeland Security warns of domestic violent extremists targeting government officials. An intelligence assessment of the DHS security demonstrates law enforcement's growing fear of violence from anti-government extremists, emboldened by the recent standoff at the Bundy Ranch in Nevada. This report was released the 22nd of July by DHS Intelligence and Analysis, warns of an increasing trend of anti-government violence from what are described as domestic violent extremists, inspired by the recent standoff at the Bundy Ranch in Bunkerville, Nevada. The report, titled Domestic Violent Extremists Pose Increased Threat to Government Officials and Law Enforcement, was obtained by published by Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, a nonprofit alliance to local, state, and federal resource professionals that have been advocating for criminal charges against Clive Bundy and malicious snipers involved in the April standoff with the Bureau of Land Management. In recent months, the report suggests there have been a notable increase in violence from domestic extremists motivated by anti-government ideologies. Compared to the previous 4 years, DHS assesses that the perceived victory by militia extremists is a show of force against the Department of Interior Bureau of Land Management will likely inspire additional anti-government violence over the next year. The report reflects a current trend in national law enforcement community that views the rise of domestic extremist groups, variously referred to as militia or anti-government extremists, as well as sovereign citizens, a significant threat to the safety of government officials, law enforcement, and first responders. A recent survey conducted by the National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism, START, at the University of Maryland found that law enforcement throughout the county or country identifies sovereign citizens as a top terrorist threat, greater even than those posed by Islamic extremists. And the report goes on from there.
We're living in an upside-down world, really, aren't we? With this, of course we are.
Yeah, seeing as there was no violence from the, Bundy situation, what they go on to say is though law enforcement agencies have been warning for years about the potential of violence perpetrated by members of so-called sovereign citizens movement, who believe that the U.S. government is operating outside of its jurisdiction and generally do not recognize federal, state, and local laws, policies, or government regulations, the DHS recent assessment does not focus on members of this group. Instead, the assessment focuses on domestic violent extremists motivated by anti-government ideologies and a common perception of government overreach and oppression. Unlike sovereign citizens, these groups and individuals recognize government authority. However, they may engage in acts of violence due to their perception that the United States government is tyrannical and oppressive and needs to be violently resisted or overthrown. The assessment refers repeatedly to militia extremists who are defined as facilitating or engaging in acts of violence directed at federal, state, or local government officials, infrastructure, in their response to their belief that the government deliberately is stripping America of their freedoms and is attempting to establish a totalitarian regime. And it goes on to talk about the Clive Bundy situation. They say victory at Bunkerville.
Is that from Breitbart, though? Did that originate?
No, they wrote an article about it. But this originated from the Department of Homeland Security
right.
at START, and it was released by the Environmental Public Employees for
right.
Environmental Responsibility.
Okay.
This was on this PDF was up at the beginning of the week. On the 14th,
right.
It was posted to this site I'm looking at here and to Breitbart, but it did not originate there. It was out a few days before that. But they talk about it talks about in here the victory at Bunker Hill.
Well, the thing that got me was from the report, and the Breitbart it highlighted this. And I, once again, folks, from the report, it quotes, or I'll quote, and I want to thank Marianne for sending this and something else I'll mention as well. But from the report, the report states, after years of only sporadic violence from violent domestic extremists motivated by anti-government ideologies, comma, and that's the first part of the sentence. Think about that. After years of only sporadic violence from violent domestic extremists motivated by anti-government ideologies, INA, which is the intelligence and analysis part of DHS, has seen a spike within the last year in violence committed by militia extremists and lone offenders who hold violent anti-government beliefs. Do you see how that's worded? The fear that this instills, and of course, you can go on. Moving on a little bit here, because we're really hitting a lot of information. I want to thank Marianne again. Again, this being a follow-up Friday. Go ahead, sir.
Well, I just wanted to touch on this report one more time.
Sure.
And it goes on to say,
recent
spike in anti-government attacks and plots since November of 2013, the increase is believed to be motivated by a perception of government actions addressing political issues such as gun control, land use, property and other activities as interfering with their individual rights and oppressive measures that warrant violent reprisal against U.S. government entities and law enforcement. It says, historically, spikes in violence have followed high-profile confrontations involving the U.S. government, including Ruby Ridge, Wake, and Waco. DHS identifies the recent standoff with the Bureau of Land Management agents in Bunkersville, Nevada, as an example of such an event that could inspire further violence. There was no violence involved in this issue. Involved in Clive Bundy. No shots were fired. Nobody was killed. Yes, there was a uprising to a show of force that was brought to Bunkerville. But it goes on to say that the militia extremists believe that their show of force against the Bureau of Land Management in April standoff was a defining victory over government oppression. And is galvanizing some individuals, particularly the militia extremists and violent lone wolf offenders, to actively confront law enforcement officials, increasing the likelihood of violence. The extremists,
yeah.
Golden extremists, and like-minded lone offenders will attempt to replicate these confrontational tactics in future force armed standoffs with law enforcement and government officials. They say that there are several events having a connection to Bunkersville based on news reports and information provided by law enforcement. And the biggest issue they can connect to this is the murder of two Las Vegas police officers that were committed by Jared and Amanda Miller, who were at the Bundy Ranch long enough to be kicked off by the son of Clive Bundy, who went on to murder two police officers.
Right. Not Bundy's son didn't murder the two police officers.
No, he kicked these people off of his land because of their violent views, which was reported at the time of happening. So, I mean, all this in this report, it just bothers me. You know, the title, Domestic Violent Extremists Targeting Government Officials. You know, as I said, I'll reiterate, at Bunkerville, where Ted Bundy and Bureau of Land Management had a standoff, there was no violence.
Clive and Bundy.
Oh, sorry. Clive and Bundy. There was no violence. And I have yet to see a connection, aside from the people who were on his property that were told to leave. And any other, except for that instance, I haven't seen any other or heard of any other threats or violence of any kind.
No, but it provides the excuse for interesting use of the word perception, and it's the perception, the perceived threat. It's not the actual threat, but the perceived
threat.
Correct. Which is, folks, I mean, this is how things are playing out.
And if you notice that they say it's a perceived threat by the militia violent extremists because of encroaching tyrannical and oppressive tactics being used by the United States government over firearms, property use, and they list a couple other things here, and it's a perceived threat to law enforcement as well. The word is used in both for the extremists and against them, which, you know, as you can perceive anything. You know, you talked about the conspiracy theorists or theories, and, you know, we're no longer dealing with conspiracy theories. We're dealing with factual events that can be proven one way or another. If you perceive it to be a conspiracy theory, that's your perception or opinion. It doesn't mean it's fact. What the facts are the facts, depending on the issue. But for most of these issues that people are perceiving as conspiracy theories, they are provably true. And the oppression by the United States government is one of them. The gun control is another one. The telling people how to use their land is another one. Taking land from people is another one. Everything they list in here isn't a perceived threat. It's a factual argument that's being made by people who are worried about the direction their government is heading in and the future of their country and their families here.
Well, perhaps we should have, you know, folks, how the socialist Democrats or the socialist, I'll say the socialist Democrats or the communists have the pejorative term birther for those questioning the eligibility of Barack Hussein Obama, constitutional eligibility, I should add. Maybe we should have our own term for those who make fun of those people wanting to look at conspiracies, because conspiracies do exist. Otherwise, they would not be listed in Black's Law Dictionary. Otherwise, courts would not file charges against people for conspiracy. So conspiracies do exist, but maybe we should have our own pejorative term for those mocking the people wanting to know more about conspiracies. How about this? How about ICERS, which would be investigative conspiracy evaluation researchers? You know, ICERS are instead of, well, you've heard of the pejorative term birther. Well, let's uplift those people who want to investigate conspiracy theories as maybe ICERS, as opposed to conspiracy theorists. But anyway, yeah, that's just quickly off the top of my head. But all anyway, right. I just want to read this from Marianne again, who we were, again, this being a follow-up Friday. Remember we were talking about the other day, the article at Canada Free Press by Elena Johnson Powell about the Ebola virus and about how the number 17 was like all over the place. And of late, 17 seems to be everywhere. The MH17, the Malaysian Flight 17, I mean, 17 is just all over. Well, Marianne writes this. She says, I've been thinking about the 17 you mentioned in the CFP article about Ebola. Take a look at this sentence, and let's assume, she writes, that the figures were manipulated by somebody to get a message across. And we know that they do that. We know that they use communications like this out in the open to get messages across.
Yeah, through code words or subliminal messaging, whatever that suits their needs, they will use. It could be blatant in the open, and we don't see it due to their as I said, they're coding. And a good example is what W said about picking up on the silver and moving away from the dollar. You know, that was a very subliminal thing that was put out for a select few in an area where most don't see. But more coded messages and other coded messages are put out on a more widespread platform on a daily basis. They have keywords, they have code words, they have
numbers and all sorts of things. Well, Marianne writes the sentence, West Africa has tallied 1,711 Ebola diagnoses and 932 deaths. And she writes, well, the first two numbers in the sentence are 17. That's obvious. But there's something else. Just using the figures, they could go in either order. Think about this. Let's see here. Where are we? Okay, 932 deaths. 3 plus 2 equals 5, so 932 could be 95, all right? If you take 9 and add 3 and 2, it's 5. That would give you 171195. Well, let's take those figures in reverse order. We know, and this is true, the devil likes to do things backwards. If you've ever seen, if you've ever studied, I should say, the rest is our material. You know that, for example, things put in mirror images of things, mean things. Now, remember the occult images from music that were played backwards back in the 70s and backmasking, remember that? Take that number that she wrote, the 171195. It goes 5, 9, 11, 17. And if you take 9 and 11 from it, then you get 517, which leads you to Ezekiel chapter 5, verse 17. And didn't we talk about Ezekiel 5:17? Not just once, but a couple of times this week.
Yeah, Nathan had us, in the latest instance, Nathan had us read it on air last night. And just to for those who missed it, Ezekiel 5:17 says, "So I will send upon you famine and evil beasts, and they shall bereave thee, and pestilence and blood shall pass through thee, and I will bring a sword upon thee. I, the Lord, have spoken it."
Exactly. Now, again, she writes, and we acknowledge the fact that this all could be coincidence. We could be, we're looking through a glass darkly. But the fact that, here's a sentence that really kind of made me wonder a little bit. Where did they get these numbers from? 43% of them, referencing the victims, recovered after intravenous treatment. Now, here are the numbers, and think about these numbers for a moment. Even when the serum was administered 104 to 120 hours, she highlights the 104 and 120, as I would do as an investigative researcher and investigator. Well, when you take the numbers, and remember, you don't use zeros in occult numerology. 4 plus 1 plus 2 is equal 7. And then when you have the 1 in front of it, of course, that makes 17. So there's another 17. She writes, it could be nothing, it could be coincidence, but as you said, it could be the elites using numbers to send messages. All we're saying, folks, is there's something going on here. And people might laugh and they might get snarky. You know, I've got the snarky emails, and I've got emails of people with fresh eyes, like Marianne, fresh eyes looking at this, saying, wait a minute, there's something odd here with these numbers. So, using your fresh eyes, ladies and gentlemen, knowing the occult numerology, how these people like to communicate, I urge everyone to send me whatever research you might have. And by the way, I want to thank a number of people for sending me their documentation. We received a box, ladies and gentlemen. It weighed, I think, 32 pounds, and inside the box were several binders that were full of papers of research done. What I said, I think the box is 32 pounds of papers. Thank you. You know who sent it. The person that sent it, you know who sent it, obviously. Not too many people send that many binders and that many papers. And I also want to give a mention to JT. JT, we received what you sent. Just want to say thank you. But nonetheless, okay, again, follow up Friday kind of house cleaning. A lot of information that we're going through, believe it or not. If you, I would urge, please do not dismiss what we're talking about as just lunacy. There's communication. There's covert communication going on. There's a lot of communication. It seems that there's an uptick in communication. And I really want people to start paying attention to what is being said on the news or what you're reading in articles, the numbers in particular. Just for example, Obama, his number is 44, 44 rays in the rug on the Oval Office. He'll be on the ground for 44 hours from Sunday through Tuesday. In an inexplicable, for an inexplicable purpose, or at least the purpose we don't know about. But there's another 44 that's built in there. A couple of more 44s that are built into that visit from Obama. Aside from him being the 44th president, the 44 hours he'll be on the ground. Well, I'll let 44s, because that relates to the larger picture of what we're going to be talking about during the second hour. Yeah. Talking about giving you a headache, but I got to tell you, is it mere coincidence? I think not. So there's a lot of things taking place, a lot more news to get into as well.
Yeah, Michael Snyder wrote a great article on the NAFTA. NAFTA is 20 years old, and here are 20 facts to show how it is destroying the economy. And we don't have to go through all these, but it says back in the early 1990s, the North American Free Trade Agreement was one of the hottest political issues in the country. When he was running for president in 1992, Bill Clinton promised that NAFTA would result in an increase in the number of high-quality jobs for Americans and that it would reduce illegal immigration. Ross Perot warned just the opposite would happen. He warned that if NAFTA was implemented, there would be a great, giant sucking sound, as thousands of businesses and millions of jobs will leave the country. Most Americans choose to believe Bill Clinton. Well, it's 20 years later, and it turns out Ross Perot was right, and Clinton was dead wrong. But now history is repeating itself, and most Americans don't even realize it is happening. As you will read about at the end of this article, Barack Obama has negotiated a secret trade agreement or treaty that is being called NAFTA on steroids, and if Congress adopts it, we will lose millions of more good-paying jobs. It amazes me that the American people can fall for the same lies over and over again, the lies that serial liar Barack Obama is telling about free trade and the globalization of the economy are the same lies that Bill Clinton was telling in the early 1990s. And it goes on to list how many Americans remember Bill Clinton as a great president for some reason, and it turns out he was completely wrong about NAFTA. Here's 20 facts following that show that NAFTA is destroying the economy. And we'll just go over a few here. Over number two, it's estimated that NAFTA has cost the U.S. over 1 million jobs. U.S. manufacturers pay Mexican workers just a little over $1 an hour to do jobs that American workers used to do. The number of illegal immigrants living in the United States has more than doubled since the implementation of NAFTA. Since the auto industry bailout, 70% of all GM vehicles have been built outside the United States. The exporting of massive amounts of government subsidized U.S. corn down into Mexico has destroyed more than 1 million Mexican jobs and has helped fuel the continual rise in the number of illegal immigrants coming north. Someone making minimum wage in Mexico today can buy 38% fewer consumer goods than the day before NAFTA went into effect. Another one. Overall, the United States has lost more than 56,000 manufacturing facilities since 2001. So you can see that this is not just affecting the United States. It's also affecting the other countries who are part of the agreement. In 1994, only 27 million, million Americans were on food stamps. Today, more than 46 million Americans are on food stamps. And it goes on from there. And it says after America, this is former CIA director David Petraeus. He said about NAFTA, after America comes North America. Petraeus said confidentially in answering the question about what comes after the United States. The theme of the panel discussion, are we on the threshold of a North American decade? He also boasted about how the three economies have been put together over the last 20 years as part of the implementation of the North American Free Trade Agreement, which is NAFTA. And many other comments and quotes, if you just look up the title, NAFTA is 20 years old, you will find that article by Michael Snyder. It is right on the money. And this NAFTA agreement being 20 years old, we now have with the North American Free Trade Agreement, we have the Pacific, what was that, the Trans-Pacific Partnership. We all now have what Obama did through executive order, an African trade agreement. And they are shrinking the globe and its economy. They're combining the globe. They're consolidating the economies. And it's just going to continue to spiral. It was once said that a U.S. market crash wouldn't affect other countries, but now we see how any crash in any country affects the greater economy as a whole. And this is going to continue to get worse with the globalization that the Department of Homeland Security warns about is a perceived threat by the militia, the violent militia members.
Right. Well, by the way, I just got an email here. When W does come on, you were talking about the economy. You were talking about different different things, Michael Snyder article. I got an email, KNUSW, when we went on the electronic silver fix today, why did silver go down? Also, is the new fix a scam? The latter, of course, yes, it's a scam, but we'll let W explain that. But
well, if I can, I remember when he talked about this, he said that there's, you know, metals could still go down, that it doesn't mean that you'll see a direct influx in the price of silver or a direct downturn in the U.S. dollar. He said it was a turning point, and not that either one would go one way or the other too quickly, but a beginning of a trend, more or less, than anything else.
Right, right. Here's the thing that people have to remember about gold and silver, which is not related to what W or V had said. Gold and silver, of course, or not related to the timeline, let's just put it that way. Gold and silver are nothing more than preservation of your wealth, all right, period. That's all that is. It's not an investment. It's not anything that, you know, you don't retain gold and silver to make money on it. You retain your wealth. That's the trick here. Now, the value of gold and silver, there's two things going on. The value of gold and silver is being manipulated. The value of the U.S. dollar is being depressed as well. But the manipulation is outweighing the depression of the dollar. So what we're seeing is the value by U.S. dollar standards going down in gold and silver. Now, what W is talking about the coding in the 15th or the 17th, depending on which calendar you used, that has nothing to do with the price or value of the gold and silver. It's just kind of a heads-up, kind of a message. Remember, we had talked about messages. This is all that. That's all that is. So do not be confused with, oh my goodness, silver is going to go up or silver is going to go down. No. It has nothing to do with that. It's just a code about a message. That's all that is. So.
And I don't believe we'll ever see a true market value price of silver or gold until, you know, things are too late. I don't think that will be worked out until after an economic crash and, you know, a system of trade began to be implemented amongst community members. I don't think you'll ever see a, you know, silver again at $50 price. And no matter what the price of silver is, under $20, as you've pointed out extensively, Dad, that the price of mining it alone and selling it is worth
Absolutely.
More than what it is right now.
Yeah, exactly. And the fact is, you're going to see, well, and I saw this on a recent news telecast where they had a financial advisor on saying, oh, you don't want to be in gold and silver. In fact, the man even referenced gold and silver like the, and I'm not even sure, was it Bernanke or but one of his cohorts saying that they're barbarous relics. Who said that? I don't recall who said that.
Bernanke, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, and I thought that was a rather interesting statement. So any time that they're trying to talk you out of holding gold and silver, of course, means that this would be a good buying opportunity. And I happened to see saw on a list, what do you call those email lists that are, anyway, about silver going down, you know, could silver go down to $9 and gold go down to $700? And my goodness, you know, maybe we should get out and on.
That's what they want. You know?
Yeah, and I'm thinking, they don't understand. You know, they really don't get this. They're not understanding this.
Look at all the companies that have popped up that on TV. Commercially advertised alone, nationally, let alone locally, that will, you know, you send them your gold or silver or your jewelry, and they send you back a check. These companies are continuing to pop up, and they're not doing this because, you know, they're trying to help you. They're trying to scoop up any form of real wealth that is left here because it is a hedge against their paper fiat currency.
Right. Yep. Yep. So, folks, be very careful. If you have in your safe at home or under your mattress or in your glove box or buried in your backyard, wherever you might have it, if you've got the silver or gold or whatever, hang on to it. Now's not the time to get rid of it, certainly, but hang on to it because, again, you have to look at it as a preservation of wealth. And look, I'm not a financial advisor, but I'll say this. If gold is a good bargain at 20, it's a good bargain at 10, an even better bargain at 10. And those people who purchased it, and I see this too, the people who purchased it at $40 or $38 or $37. And by the way, my father-in-law was in that position as well, really in that position. He purchased when it was very, very high. At least he has a family, or at least family members who understand. Look, you don't sell when it's low, and it's still, regardless, it's still a preservation of wealth. You're going to want to hang on to it. So the people who are beating their chests and they're ripping their hair out because of the current of value of gold and silver, folks, just hold on, because I do believe, as Jim Willey has stated, Gerald Salenti, you'll hear tomorrow on the Weekend Report and others, they'll be talking about precious metals and really the rise in the precious metals. So,
and from a few what you'd call elite insiders of their own writing, they don't even touch paper money. And they laugh, you know, when people call. You know, I saw one writing where they talk about the issuing and lending of paper currency and how it's a joke to ask somebody to borrow something that's worth nothing.
You've got an IOU in your pocket filled with satanic symbols? Seriously? Really? And the only reason that's worth anything is because people have agreed that it's worth something, whereas if you're holding a piece of gold or silver, it's worth something, well, because people have, millennia agreed that it's worth something, and it is based on its rarity. But having said that, folks, we've reached the top of the hour. Oh, no, we haven't. I'm looking at the wrong clock here.
Yes. Well, we can, in the last closing minutes of this Friday first hour, a recent article on Ebola has come out. Ebola epidemic most likely larger than reported, the World Health Organization has said. And West Africa's deadly Ebola epidemic is probably much worse than the world realizes, with health centers on the front lines warning that actual numbers of deaths and illnesses are significantly higher than the official estimates, this from the World Health Organization. So for 2,127 cases of disease and 1,145 deaths have been reported in four nations, that's Guinea, Liberia, Nigeria, and Sierra Leone, the World Health Organization announced Friday, but the organization also warned that the actual number is almost certainly higher, perhaps by a very considerable margin. Now, you want to talk about fear mongering.
It definitely is.
Well,
it is, but when I was talking to Ben Swan this morning, name dropping, you know, I'll say this. You know what he told me? Because I asked him, I said, what do you think about this Ebola? And he kind of took your position a little bit. But he said, it takes your eyes off of the economy, doesn't it?
Yeah, I mean, and I saw reports of Bill Gates, you know, got on his yacht and left the country when this broke, the Ebola story broke, or last week, I believe. I don't know where I saw that from. I'll have to grab that report. But and I don't know if you saw this. In the last minute we have, Soros makes a big bet on a market crash. Does Soros know something we don't about the S&P 500? And we can get into that after W comes on, and many other stories that are important.
Folks, you're gonna want to hear. You're really gonna want to listen to what W's gonna say. I didn't mean to talk over you, Joe, but you're really gonna want to listen to what W's gonna say. If you can, take this opportunity at the break, if you're listening by your computer, to grab a pencil and paper. You might need it for this. Having said that, Joe, I'll let you go ahead and take us out.
All right, folks, you're listening to the Hagman & Hagman Report on this Friday, August 15th, 2014. We're going to go to our commercial break. We'll be right back after these few short messages with some more news. And we'll be taking your phone calls at 661-244-9839 halfway through this next hour and through the end of the show on this, what did you call it?
The Follow-Up Friday.
Follow-Up Friday. We'll be right back. Stay with us.
Hi folks, Doug Hagman here. You might know me as the co-host from the Hagman and Hagman Report, or as a frequent guest on Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. If you're like me, you're tired and confused over today's headlines. You just don't know where to turn for accurate, concise information about really what's going on, what's truly going on in today's society. If you don't know where to turn for accurate, well-researched, and properly vetted news, I've got a suggestion. In fact, it's a requirement. Bookmark Canada Free Press. That's CanadaFreePress.com on the internet. It's just not for Canada. It's for news across the world. Judy McLeod, founding editor, has put together a vast array of talented writers like Kelly O'Connell, Daniel Greenfield, Dr. Eileena Johnson-Powell, a lot of guest columnists, very talented writers. Folks, that's Canada Free Press at CanadaFreePress.com. Now mobile friendly, follow on Facebook, because without America, there is no free world.
You better wake up fast and listen to this, America. The Obama campaign has launched attack squads disguised as truth teams dedicated to intimidating and silencing all political dissent carried over the internet that criticizes the Marxist Obama. Truth squads specifically focused on covering up Obama's endless trail of lies, corruption, and subversion, and using the Gestapo power of our own government to police and censor the internet and shut down websites that dare to carry the real truth about Obama's Marxist coup. Remember the names of these Gestapo-style agencies at work right there in your neighborhood: KeepingHisWord.com, KeepingGOPHonest.com, and AttackWatch.com. KGB, SS, and Gestapo-style police state gangster organizations at work to silence the important voices of patriot dissent, some of which have already been shut down by Obama's orders. Adolf Hitler would have been proud. We're the 21st century Tea Party Patriots.
Hi folks, Doug Hagman here for American Survival Wholesale. Talked to the owners of American Survival Wholesale yesterday, last night. As a matter of fact, it was after the show. And we were talking about their NATO military-grade, military-spec NBC suit, $199.90. They said, look, this item is not going to be in stock for very long. They've been flying out of the door, out of their warehouse. Many, many people. In fact, they've gotten orders for dozens, if you can imagine that. And these are about for corporations that have been buying them from AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Folks, if you go to AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com, just in the search box, all you do is type in NBC for nuclear, biological, and chemical. Up will come the NBC NATO grade, NATO military spec suit that you could buy. It's complete with a gas mask. This is really a quality item. If you have any fear whatsoever, and I've got a respect for, not necessarily a fear, for the threat of Ebola airborne contaminants, I certainly would want this in my closet. I really would. Not just for me, but for every member of my family. That's American Survival Wholesale. Get them while you can, while they're still available. That's the NBC NATO military spec survival suits. NBC suits by AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. $199.90. A deal under $200. That's AmericanSurvivalWholesale.com. Tell them Doug and Joe sent you.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth. You can't handle the truth.
North East and LA.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this follow-up Friday edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. It is August 15th, 2014. I want to say this. Right now, as we speak, under guard. No, I'm just kidding about the under guard. I was going to say at gunpoint, but that's not funny. But being held captive with duct tape and party favors is my 23-year-old daughter. Just want to wish her a happy birthday. She's actually having cake and ice cream right now, celebrating her 23rd birthday, which was yesterday. And just want to say happy birthday again to her. The entire world, Jackie, is listening to this, so they know that you're celebrating your birthday as we speak. So there's no good, and this is the only time you listen to the program when I mention your name. So no, I'm kidding about that. She's a darling daughter. God bless her, and she's one of the greatest daughters that dad could ever have. Very proud of her, and that's Jackie. Happy birthday. God bless you. God bless you, honey. And she's got a great mom, too, let me tell you, for all that she does.
Happy birthday, Jackie. And with that, I want to also ask people to keep Mike and Jeannie in their prayers. We met Mike and Jeannie in Montana at the Whitestone Remnant Conference, and they're very active in with the Transfer American Survival Wholesale and with projects helping put veterans back to work. And Mike broke his ankle pretty badly this week. And
there's a compound fracture.
Yeah, we asked that you guys keep him in your prayers. Apparently he just found a different job and just started that and now broke his ankle in an unwork-related accident. And we'll be praying for you, Mike. You keep your head up. Now, W was on the line. He dropped off here. So you put that bat light back up and get him to call back in. We will go right to him, and his service isn't always the greatest, so he could have just dropped off. But in the...
All right, we're waiting for W to call back. Yeah, send up the bat light.
And I wanted to hit on this article, and I'll keep an eye on the studio here. Population controllers call babies carbon legacies a threat to the environment. I guess it takes global warming hysteria to get the bioethics movement to criticize what is known in the trade as an artificial reproductive technology. And I'll save that article as we do have W with us now. Good evening, W. It's great to have you back on the show.
Yeah, how you guys doing?
Good.
Can
we keep the tension on the string tight enough where you can actually stay with us for a while? I mean, you know, the tin cans. All right.
I actually did that with my neighbor, Philip, and we did it from our bedroom windows, and we had upstairs windows between our houses, and it actually worked pretty good. We could talk loud enough that we could hear ourselves over the string, or just from window to window in the middle of the night.
How great is that?
Told us to stop that, okay? Quiet down, go to sleep.
Well,
I found out that you have to use lighter string. Our string was more like twine, and twine doesn't work as good as fish line and other stuff, so there is a physics to it. So that was one of my early physics lessons.
Interesting you should say that. I can understand how that would work. Like the piano wire versus the commercial brown twine. But with that, this being a follow-up Friday, of course, you heard Nathan Leal yesterday. We talked about a lot of things.
And, in fact, he and I got to talk after the show for a little bit, and that was very enjoyable also, and commiserate a little bit on some of these things. You know, just for the sake of the audience, it is something that comes up because as church folks, there is an important apprehension towards getting all caught up in the numbers and dates and times and all this mischief, because we're warned over and over again about ordering our lives through divination and following these practices that were, you know, outlawed by God. But the reason they were outlawed is because people were practicing them. And so that we're aware of them, though, is not the same as practicing and ordering our lives by them. And so I want to make sure that there's an important distinction there. While the discussion here is about being aware that the other team is orchestrating a lot of their actions based on these number relationships and timing and seasons and all these things, that's not the same as practicing it. We're not falling into that camp. We may be aware of it, but it's not like we're trying to play their game. You know, we're not playing the card game. You know, the only way to win is not to play. Well, we're not playing their game. But we are fully aware that the game's afoot, that they're playing a game amongst themselves, and that they're ordering their lives and events around it, and their feasts and holidays around certain, you know, things, because they think they get power from them. And as you'll remember back from the May 2nd show, there's real physics behind a lot of that. It's not all just voodoo stuff. There is real physics behind some of the things that they do that is useful for them, if you understand where this is all coming from. And for those that haven't heard the May 2nd show, it would be worth going back to listen to in order to understand some of the reason why that's important from a real physics standpoint.
Gotcha. As a matter of fact, I'm right now as we speak, I'll be uploading it to SoundCloud, so you will have yet another way to, and I'll post it over at HagmanandHagman.com and make it a feature segment for all you folks. So, very interesting. Go ahead, sir.
Well, and so with that in mind, with that caveat, so that, you know, we aren't getting anybody sideways or stressed out. So we recognize that these people, you know, they, you know, say play by the numbers. They're ordering and orchestrating a lot of their activities, you know, looking to see if the numbers are right, looking to see if, you know, the alignments are right, et cetera. Okay, well, because they think that if they can get it just right, everything's gonna work out. That, you see, it, one of the scriptures is having the forms of religion, having the appearance of religion, you know, these whitewashed sepulchres, as Christ called them. You know, they're literally, it's a cleaned up grave. What's in there? Dead people. But it's a nice clean place. There's pretty flowers on the outside. They doll themselves up. I see some of these Hollywood performers who are, you know, great musicians, great actors, beautifully adorned in the finest cars and around the best people and, you know, airbrushed and sprayed and everything else and coiffed perfectly with their hair. But what's inside? What's driving them? What's in their heart? And, you know, having the right form. They can say all the right things, but is what's inside them alive with life from God, or is it, you know, just the appearance, and inside they're dead people being run by demons? And, you know, their wit is sharp and cutting. Their performances have secret signals and signs that are designed to, you know, talk to the other initiates and act as though they get, you know, you want to be successful like me, then, you know, play the game like I do and be an initiate like me. Well, but they're lifeless inside. So, you know, we look at the numbers that they're foisting around and trying to get the spells just right. And this year, the number that has been predominant, which I know you've spoken about and that I think is a critical number in the way that they view things, is this number 17. So, and I've said it before on the show, but we might have new listeners or people didn't hear it before, and it was one of the things that Nathan and I talked about last night. And I think this is a really important point, and that is we have a crossroads to salvation at the cross. And so that was where the road changed for us. And one of the things that Nathan raised last night was broad is the way, broad is the gate. Broad Street is this location in the circle that he found in this Pepsi commercial at this Columbus monument. And with that in mind, then we come back to narrow is the way, narrow is the gate. You know, the cross is this precise location only through Christ, through the blood of Christ, through that sacrifice in our place, can we get to God, where our sins are cleansed, the price is paid, and we can actually come into God's presence. But that's it. That's the only gate. And so then we come back. These people think that they can reach perfection by orchestrating the numbers just right, by getting the spell just right, by getting the orientations and the relationships locked in just right in relationship to what? The Son. Because at the end of the day, they actually are sun worshipers. It sounds crazy in an advanced society that somebody would be worshipers of a celestial body. But if you understand that there's physics behind it, the reason that they had to be sun worshipers is because all of the energy that they're looking for at a physical level is based on a process, based on an orientation in this subatomic physics. And somebody had to lock it in a way that would be understandable even to a less sophisticated mind. So by just pointing out orientations related to the physical sun and then ascribing formula to the bodies going around the sun and trying to lock those in to rites and feasts and times of the year so that they would conduct certain activities when those alignments were precise and allowed for this torsion energy to be stronger related to these celestial events. There's real physics, but the formulas are all based on trying to fool people into conducting these activities when it has the greatest actual physics backup. And that's why I go back to the May 2nd show, and it'll help maybe to understand. It's a very long, involved conversation. I try to have it as often as I can with some of the guests that have a bit better understanding. But for the sake of just discussion, there's something there. A lot of this stuff is just less important. It's not all related to that. It's a dance to get to that exact place at precisely the right time and to hide a lot of real physics in a fog of other events so that you get to that precise place at exactly the right moment. So now we come back and we say, okay, we have a precise point of entry into the kingdom of heaven. And that is the blood of Christ at the cross, salvation. It's the only way to cross the chasm, one bridge across the chasm that separates us from God when we're divided, separated from him by sin. Because God can't have anything in his presence that isn't perfect. Nothing. I remember a gentleman who had a death experience, and he got to heaven, and he knew that his wife was just over the top of this hill, and so he was walking across this little meadow, as he described it, And as he was walking, he noticed all these beautiful flowers, and every flower was exactly the same. All the flowers, they were swaying in a little bit of a breeze, and then he realized the breeze was actually music, and that they were resonating with the music. And he was looking at the flowers, and in this heavenly realm, to ask the question was the answer. Before you could complete the question, the answer was already there in your mind, because you work at the speed of thought, not even the speed of light, but the speed of thought. And so he asked the question, why are all the flowers the same? And before he could complete asking the question, he had the answer. Well, because these flowers are perfect. There's a perfect design that these flowers are made by. So they're all identical because they're identically perfect. That's the only thing God has in his kingdom, his presence. With that in mind, if we have any imperfection, we can't be there present with God. He can't have us there. And until we are cleansed by the blood of Christ, where the sin is removed, washed away, history gone, as far as the east is from the west, till that happens, we can't be in God's presence. So with that in mind, that Christ is our gateway to God, do these people, these opponents, these anti-God people, have a way of what they believe to be their salvation? Yes, my contention is that they do. And they have, just as we have a symbol of our salvation through the cross, they are under a curse. The devil knows, obviously, that he's under a curse. So the devil has schemed a plot, a plan, whereby he can be released from the curse, where the curse can be nullified, where God's curse on him and all of his minions and all those who associate with them can be nullified. Now, to you and I, we understand with a God consciousness, with a biblical understanding, that the devil's going to lose. But remember, he himself knows that the end is near, but he deceives. And so those that are playing in his camp are deceived. They're believing a lie, and he has convinced, just as he beguiled Eve and convinced her something that wasn't true, but she bought into it, just as she shared it with Adam and he bought into it. They believed the lie and suffered the consequences. All those that the devil has enchanted have believed on a lie. And what is the lie? That they can be as God, that they can do whatever they want without consequence, that there is a way that they don't have to suffer a curse, and they can do whatever they want still, because they are under a curse from God, just as the devil is.
Right.
What
right.
is that way of nullifying God's curse in this demonic, satanic, Luciferian, Illuminati scheme plan? What is that way of making it so that God's curse cannot be on them? God blessed Adam and his seed and gave Adam and his seed the earth as an inheritance. Promised it to him. Promised it to him, you know, unlike, say, when you go up into Numbers and Leviticus and, you know, if you do this, I do that. If you do this other thing, I do this other thing. He gave Adam the earth for an inheritance. So we nullified that somewhat or handed it off to Satan by Adam's sin, gave him title deeds and authority there. But our role here now is to recapture the earth, the inheritance, and for Adam's seed through Christ to inherit the earth as it was promised from the beginning. And that's a blessing. how does Satan, who is under a curse, force God to bless his seed? If his seed is hybridized with Adam. That's the Luciferian plot. That's the Luciferian scheme. And so the contention is, and remember, true, I personally believe that this is what actually happened, but there's room for discussion. There's room to disagree. And I would allow for, you know, there's plenty of room to say, no, I don't think that's what actually happened. But the Satanists, the Luciferians, the Canaanites today, the Canaanites of old, have been taught and believe that they are the seed by Eve of the serpent, that Eve had sex with the serpent, and that the serpent, Satan, is the father of Cain and all of his seed, and that Abel, who was a child of Adam, that Abel, being a child of promise, was a threat to Cain and his lineage, a threat to Satan. So Satan whispering in Cain's ear, if your brother isn't here, you'll get everything. You'll get the blessing. And Cain was susceptible and did in fact kill his brother. We know that. But the
right
thing that people don't recognize and don't understand, it's my contention, that as soon as Cain had killed his brother, he was headed next, and Satan was enticing him to go kill his father, Adam. Not his mother and father, his father. And what would have happened if Adam had died? There would be no other seed possible from Adam except, remember, Eve was made out of the rib from Adam's side, so there would have been the genetics there. And so God, in order to have blessed Adam, would have had to allow that Canaanite seed, even with his mother. Now, it sounds crazy, but let's think about this for a second. What happened with Isis? This model. Remember, we got a space station named Isis. We got these rebel groups over in Iraq named Isis. What's the importance of Isis? Importance of Isis. And in fact, just in case you didn't know, what's the Statue of Liberty actually? It's an Isis idol, model, figurine. That's Isis in the New York Harbor. They're laughing at you because you don't know their secret code, their secret messages, their secret symbology. You're immersed in it all through your culture, and you don't even know what's around you. Statue of Liberty? It's a statue of Isis. You get your liberty through Isis? What's the meaning of this Isis figure? Isis, supposedly, her lover was Osiris, these ancient gods, god people from some earlier civilization, pre-Adamic civilization. Isis had this lover, Osiris, who was actually her brother. And so she's having sex with her brother. The brother gets killed, and she brings life back to him temporarily, has sex, he has a child, the child is Horus. And then it's so atrocious, so horrible, so awful, that one of the other god figures kills Osiris and cuts him up into pieces and spreads the pieces to the four corners of the earth. And so she goes out and tracks down all the pieces, and the only piece that she can't find after Osiris was killed, and by the way, he was killed on what day of the month? The 17th. So what does she do? She puts all the pieces back together, and the one piece she can't find is his penis. So she makes a monument to that because she claims that she was impregnated by him. Even though he was dead, he was revived enough to have sex with her. She has a child, and then he dies, and he's gone, and he's chopped up. And she makes this monument to him, this penis. It's the dead symbology. It's a stone. It's lifeless. But it's the symbol. And what do they honor all around the earth? What do you see in all these cultures all across Egypt, in your own capital here at Washington, D.C.? What's at the center of Washington, D.C.? What's the whole city built around? The Washington Monument.
Right.
The obelisk, code for Osiris. It's a big penis. Right in the middle of your city, in your capital of your country. And we're all supposed to believe that it's for, because they put the right name on it. It's like the bills that Congress does sometimes. If they put the right name on it, you'll agree to anything. It could be the most horrendous, evil, awful thing in the world, but if they just name it right, you'll fall for it. Oh, it's the Washington Monument. It's a big phallic symbol right in the middle of your big city, your capital. You're dancing around it. You're all excited. You take tours there. Show your children and your grandchildren. The big dildo right in the middle of your freaking country. They honor him with, what's the number they honor him with? It's 17.
17. 17. That's correct.
17. And 17 isn't just his death date. It's their revenge date. 17's their date for revenge, that he was chopped up. They're going to get their revenge. So as much as the cross is a symbol of our salvation as Christians, that the cross is the gateway to heaven, to be able to cross the divide of sin and enter into God's presence, the phallic symbol, which symbolizes the hybridization. If Adam had been killed after Abel was killed, and the only seed left that could have been alive was Cain, and any seed he might have had, even with his mother, which is what these demons think like, what this Luciferian mind is like, then Satan, Lucifer, that whole race would have experienced salvation through hybridization. Now, decent people, kind folk, church folk, they don't talk this way. We don't think about stuff this way. Hopefully, we're not this twisted. But that doesn't mean that as adults, we're allowed the luxury of not being aware of how these people function, think, act. And in fact, the very fact that we won't go there, that we, you know, don't allow ourselves to, you know, think about this, they use that. They throw all these signs and symbology right in your face, and then if you say something like the conversation that we're having right now, it's like, oh my gosh, what are you talking about? That's just crazy talk. But privately, they're laughing at you. Because this is exactly what that symbology is all about. It's their power sign. It is their gateway to salvation, to get out from under God's curse. And the objective of the devil today, right now, is to complete all the way back in that cradle of a garden that Stan identified for us a week and a half, 2 weeks ago. To finish the job, he has to do what he almost got done at the time of Noah. What was going on at Noah's time? And Christ said, as in the days of Noah, would the end days be, the end times. What was the key thing about that moment when the flood came? the scripture says that Noah alone was perfect without sin in all of his generations. It doesn't say perfect without sin, never did anything wrong, because Noah's sin was as Adam's sin. What was Noah's sin? Noah liked the fermented grapes. Noah got drunk a bunch. And it says that Noah's sin was as Adam's sin. Apparently, some of that forbidden fruit could make you a little bit drunk. So apparently Adam, and of course, you know, lost his, you know, wasn't thinking straight. May have contributed to what happened in the garden if Eve was beguiled and what didn't have her wits fully about her, and neither did Adam. So whatever the truth of the fact of the matter is, they believe, these Luciferians, these Illuminatus, these Satanists, they believe that they are the children of Cain. Cain had a different father by Eve than Adam, and the symbology here, Eve is actually Isis. They call her Isis, but they're actually saying a different story. They're saying that Eve was their Isis. They use different names. They mix it up here and there to try and confuse everybody, but the reality is it's still the same figures. And so now, what does the devil want to do? If he had been able to kill off Noah, if Noah had died, the last pure direct seed from Adam would have been gone, and it would have been the same end result as if Cain had been able to kill Adam. There would be no one left except hybrids, part human from the DNA of Adam, and part Luciferian from the DNA of Satan, the devil. And so God, in order to do what he said he was going to do, which was bless Adam and his seed, he would have had to have blessed the devil's seed or not be God. And then Satan would still win because he'd be as God. He'd be an
correct.
Equal.
Okay.
Never all wanted right. to be God. He only wanted to be as God. Now, remember, we can do the mental exercise, the spiritual exercise, and say, that was never going to happen. God's God. Never going to happen. There's a saying, and I've mentioned it to you before, that hell is a place where logic doesn't exist. See, the devil, when he sins, even sin itself, all sin is illogical. It doesn't make sense. So if you try to apply divine logic to understand why they would think this way and think that it was ever possible, you're starting that path like trying to ask for an explanation, what is evil and why does evil do the things it does? You're starting down a path where there is no logic. You're trying to understand something where there, at the end of the day, it is illogical to try and you can kind of guess and understand some of the twisted logic that they go through, the twisted dance they go through, but ultimately it's all illogical. Don't ask me to explain evil. I can sense evil. I can recognize evil. But it doesn't mean that there's an actual explanation that can make sense for why evil exists or why the devil would have sinned against God in the first place. It's insanity. It's insane. If you've ever dealt with an insane person, it's insane. So now we look at the logic applied and realize that it's a twisted logic. It has a form of sense. It has even a mechanical, mathematical sense. But at the end of the day, it falls short. It's not enough. It doesn't have the life thereof. They're going through all the forms and functions. What's the deal with the devil? You know, when you look at Scripture, we see scriptures where we say there's a Bible code, and all the verses, they cross and interlock, and everything's in there, and the beauty, the majesty, the perfection of what's there is
exactly. Yes,
okay?
Exactly.
But that's a natural, like a divine fingerprint on the work of God. The devil isn't doing anything unique and new. He's trying to mimic that. His minions, his followers, these Luciferians, these Masons, all of these different groups are trying to mimic the perfection of God through their own wisdom. But their wisdom is foolishness to God. They're only good up to a certain point, and that's it. And to a human mind, it may be that all this perfection and the numbers and the calculations, the corresponding dates and the reinforcing with the names and the values and everything else, it looks unbelievably precise. It's got to be God. No, it just happens to be that you're dealing with the ability to do calculations, orders and orders of magnitude more complex than even the biggest computers on the planet can do simultaneously from all these different directions. And yet, it's still not God's perfection. It could be perfect to the trillionth decimal point with one flaw, a trillion out. It's not God. It falls short. So the devil is orchestrating through all these Luciferian schemes, through all these different organizations, through all of their people, to get the concoction just right, the spell just right, the cauldron, everything, the date, the time, the hour, the ingredients, the formula, how many times you turn in the circle, all precisely right, like a clockwork. But it still will fall short. That's what we have to recognize. And the more they try, the more they reveal their hand, they show themselves. And in fact, they're proud to show themselves, not just to the unwashed, but to the other initiates. Why? Because they're trying to self-reinforce amongst themselves that they're right and that they own the day, and to let each other know, see that sign? See, that's us. If only you know the secret handshake, you'd recognize that's us. It's like a meeting that I had here just recently out there in the Osiris City. And the secret handshake. And I didn't give it back. I know the handshakes. Yeah, so no better than they probably did. They're freaking... So why? Because I'm not there on fraternal business. I'm there on the people's business. And I would not participate at that level. Well, suddenly you're not responsive. What be anybody? You can't know this stuff because only an initiate would know this stuff. If you don't know the secret handshake, you're not initiate. You don't know anything. I know who you are. I know what you're doing. We have to be just as savvy and just as knowledgeable and understanding to see that they're within the media, within events taking place that are being orchestrated right in front of us, that they're doing secret handshakes by the timing and the dates and the published numbers and agreed upon stuff that's being done to communicate with each other, this is something that we're doing. You're safe because you're one of us. We'll take care of you. Just know that this is us. So, for example, the 17 thing, we've seen it in these airline things. We talked about that, 317, MH17, on 7, 17 of 7 in July. We saw the Ebola article and the healthcare workers that have been infected thus far, 170. Well, the zero is silent, so it's another hidden 17. You start looking. The Algerian flight, 5017 again. This is a 17 year. This is an Osiris year. This is a death and revenge day year. And it's all through these various things. Why? Because it's like a secret handshake across the world to other members, letting them know we're coming. This is us. And at the end of the game, the Luciferian promise, the scheme, the plan is no one left except their hybrids. If they have to take the world down to a half a billion people and it's only those children of Cain left and the last direct line of Adam is gone and it takes that many to get to them, well, got to crack a few eggs to make an omelet, whatever it takes. And that's the devil's objective. That's why a lot of people, they wonder, well, but they can't get rid of the United States. They need it to make money. They're not here to make money. They're here to survive. This is about survival for them. And survival is to get out from under the curse from God and to have a part, to be partakers in the promised blessing to Adam and his seed, even if it be indirect, by creating a situation where God cannot not bless them. In order to get there now, don't have to get rid of just Abel. And it's not like Noah where it was just down to Noah. But eventually, if it's like as in the days of Noah, the devil's going to try and kill off everybody that isn't a hybrid. And that's the lie that's being told to all these people that are in these positions, that they're hybrid, so they're safe.
And think of the enormity of that. The enormity of that task is tremendous.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
I hope I'm not sounding too rambling here, but I'm trying to convey something that it's a hard concept for us to get our minds around because we don't think this way naturally.
No, I think you laid the foundation. It was a very important foundation that people have to grasp. It took me a long time to really understand the foundation. But I think you did a very good job with laying the foundation of this, the thought process. It's not what we believe, it's what they believe. And the Osiris, the obelisks, the symbology, all of this is horrific. And it's in
our face. Well, and now let's think about this for a second or two longer. Now, they have a way, a modus operandi. You know, we look at certain criminal things go on, and they have certain signature things they do. For example, with Edward Wayne Edwards. His thing was he liked to crush their thorax, so they struggled breathing. They were incapacitated, but they were still alive while he did whatever else he was left doing. It would always catch them surprised with the rabbit punch in the thorax. And so it was an art form for him. And that was his modus operandi. Well, okay. These people have a modus operandi. They use their symbology that's related to the mythology. So Isis is all over the place, the mother figure, their Eve, our Eve. It's our Eve, but a child by a different bloodline in their way of looking at it. And if you don't believe that happened, that's fine. If you want to say that they've believed a lie, okay, well, they believed a lie. Cain could have believed a lie. The devil could have lied to him that he was his son, not Adam's. And it might all have been a lie. Maybe he was Adam's son. He just believed a lie because, you know, whatever.
Well,
I don't believe that's the case, but you could make a case that the devil lied to him like he lied to Eve, beguiled him. Whatever, if their actions are their beliefs are the driver of their actions. Go back to life as an investigator is like a box of chocolates. What drives their actions? Their beliefs. lots of people are deceived into believing something that isn't true. And then they do stuff based on belief. Okay, so they're deceived. And so then we go forward in time and we look at this exact moment where we're at right now. An entire culture, multiple secret handshake groups exist, all of them as arms on an octopus, if you will, in this bigger creature, heads on a hydra. But they're working in concert together. These Illuminatus, these Masonic groups, the Bilderbergers, these 13 families. And they all have particular objectives, all the monarchies of Europe. And they have interlocking cross activities where they're, you know, coordinating their actions together. They're separate, but they're joined together, the Agenda 21 stuff. With that in mind, take one of the plot lines, groups, and look at it for a second. All these royal lines in Europe, they believe that the best person to lead the country isn't necessarily the one that was elected, but it's just a blood lineage. If you're born from the right family, then you're, you know, should be on a throne. You should reign. Well, in a Western mind here in the United States, we reject that whole concept as wrong. That's not the way we want to live. That's why these people came here, our forefathers. They wanted to get out from under that line of thinking, that line of logic, that line of reasoning. And yet there's still, you know, a huge part of the world that lives under that mindset and believe in it. And behind the scenes do their little dance, their little secret handshakes. So what's important to them? What have they telegraphed through their actions is important to them? Well, for example, look at when Prince William was born. He's born on the summer solstice, 1982.
All right, here we go, folks.
A very precise date. A very precise moment. It's not just any old day. To Luciferians, who are sun worshipers, son of God, sun having to do with the physics, where the energy power that powers the whole solar system, that drives the forces that drive this part of the universe, get their energy from. These Luciferian sun worshipers, the summer solstice, that's the brightest, longest day of the year. And at the heart of that day, at the critical moment, the peak moment, who was born? Was that an accident? Really? From the moment of conception, was there a plot and a plan to see to it that the impregnation occurred within a very precise window, occur within a range, and was it induced in any way, in order to make sure that he was born at exactly the right instant?
And under a solar eclipse.
To believe that that was an accident in this royal... And by the way, what's the relevance there? You had all the royal families represented in the mother and the father, all the lines from one area of Europe in one group, all the royal lines from the other area in the Diana group. And here's this child of promise born with all the royal bloodlines combined in one person at exactly the right moment, on exactly the right day. Now let's think about on the numbers. Is there some mischief occurring here? Is there some reinforcement intended here? I was mentioning to you earlier, Doug, Tesla, who I share certain things with. Tesla built a device about the size of a cigar box. And he put it on a building that was under construction, just the framework of this skyscraper that was being built before anything was on it. They were just riveting this thing together. So he puts this small box, attaches it by a wrap onto this girder of this building. And this box vibrates at a very precise rate. It resonates. And it's inducing the girders, the beams of this building, with a resonant note, a very precise note. And pretty soon the whole building is humming, this whole girder structure, stories and stories high. And it getting stronger and stronger and stronger because it was self-reinforcing. The energy couldn't bleed out by the way he had it set up. Pretty soon the whole structure was vibrating so bad, the rivets are popping out. And the people thought the thing was going to come crashing down just from this little teeny box on the side of that girder structure. And he had to hurry up and rip it off and take it off the thing. But it was still vibrating. He was able to take it off with his hands because the energy itself wasn't great in and of itself, but it was self-reinforcing. And it added on to itself, and it continued to reinforce its actions, and it built out into the resonant vibrations of the building. The reality is it's tuned to the frequency that the Earth resonates at, and so it was essentially bleeding resonant energy from the hum that the Earth has, because it has to do with the crystalline structures and all this other stuff. I can get into a long conversation. I'll spare your listeners. But it wasn't actually just the energy from the box. It allowed energy to bleed through from this crystalline structure matter is made out of that the Earth resonates at, and the Schumann frequency, if you will. So now you look at these dates, and these people believe that with simple maneuvers, almost like a jiu-jitsu move, if they can cause things to happen, including births and significant events on certain days, it becomes reinforcing, self-reinforcing, and it induces energy into their spells and concoctions and actions, and energy beyond that which even they've put in is added, bleeds into these events, and they get extra power from it. And in reality, in some of what they're doing, they're absolutely correct, based on real physics. A lot of it's just silliness, but there's some of it that's real. So now we look at this summer solstice, 1982. There was an eclipse on that day during the time that the prince was born. And during eclipses, torsion is magnified dramatically, the energy, this other energy, beyond the electromagnetic that we normally look at with matter, that only a higher intelligence would be aware of, some ancient intelligence. Now, that date, in Europe, when they say dates, they say in the reverse of what we say here in the U.S., we say June 21st. There they would say 21 June or 21-6. We'd say 6-21. They say 21-6. What's 2-1-6? As I've mentioned to you, and I think you've mentioned to your listeners over the last few weeks, 2-16 is the same as 6 times 6, which is 36, times 6, which is 216. And Satanists, such as Aleister Crowley and Anton LaVey and others, have pointed out that this is the hidden number that's so holy they almost couldn't even speak it. Why? Because it's code for the number that you already know from your scripture, 666, as this mark of the beast, this number of the Antichrist being, spirit. So this code,
secret handshake number that's not obvious except to another initiate, 216. Like a secret way of thinking, oh, gotcha, yeah, okay. So what date was William born on? 21-6, at the height of the summer solstice, during the eclipse. What day was William baptized on? The same day as President Obama's birthday. Same day as President Obama's birthday. The same day as his grandmother, the queen mother, great-grandmother, I should say, the queen mother, was born on. Probably not by an accident either, which is August 4th. What's August 4th? It's the 216th day of the year. So not only was William born on 21-6, 216, he was baptized on 216, the 216th day of the year, to reinforce it. What? 666, 666. Now, we may say to ourselves, well, that doesn't mean he's the Antichrist. No, 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 it's not an Antichrist, because I can tell you that there's the simple gematria, whether it be Obama or Kissinger or computer. You know, computer adds up to 666. Just take A is 6, B is 12, C is 18. Go all the way through the alphabet, and then take those values and add up the value of letters for computer, 666. What's www that you do with your World Wide Web all the time? It's code. The guys that figured that out were doing a little secret handshake mischief, having fun with you. Why? Because what's www? W is the 24th letter in the alphabet. 2 plus 4 is what? 6. The WWW is what? 666. They're having fun with you. Come on. They're just having some fun, giving a break. But they're in your face, everywhere you go, everything you do. And when we look at these events, now we go forward because timing is critical for them. Every event, exactly, precisely orchestrated. One of the most incredible things that I've ever, ever, ever seen. And I hope we're going to get the person on where we saw this together, Doug, as a guest on the show, that did the homework and found this. But you know, when William's mother, Deanna, died, it was on the 5,550th day of William's life on this planet. 5 days later, when she was buried, when he was standing on the street with other relatives, and the hearse passed by with his mother's body in it, plus or minus 20 seconds from the moment of his birth, it was 5,555 days, 0.55555 of a day from the day he was born that his mom passed by him. Now, did somebody kill her? Was the accident precise to that? Was somebody orchestrating all that out? I think it could have been. But even if it wasn't, at some other level, there is a demonic, satanic perfection that's being orchestrated here, even outside the human realm, if it's not being orchestrated in the human realm, that's in play, and we need to be recognizing it. Principalities and powers of darkness. We struggle not against flesh and blood. The genius, the machinations, the prowess, the mental prowess, the calculative prowess of these beings is hard to fathom, but it's there.
You mentioned Diana's funeral. Okay, it was exactly, now listen to this, folks, 6 years, 6 months, and 6 days from William's first official public engagement when he was 8 years, 8 months, and 8 days old. So think about that.
Well, and here's something that was manufactured, you know, orchestrated by the people involved. Not only was the baptism on August 4th, 216th day of the year, but the first day of school where he went to school was on his third year, third month, third day of life on this planet. He started to school it. Somebody thinks the numbers are pretty important. All of this is an accident, okay? They're trying to get power and blessing and everything by all these precise things. We need to recognize that. And what's the point here? At the end of the day? As I mentioned to you, Doug, there's a lot of people that may be antichrist spirits that have a lot of pull and that are evil and demonic. I go back to Edward Wayne Edwards. He considered himself to be the devil. All of the murders and killings that he did based around his key dates was the date of his first murder. So his calendar worked from his first murder. That's why even though the 216 is there and other numbers, they don't correspond to our calendar. But remember, there's other calendars. There's a Jewish calendar. There's Asian calendars. Roman calendars. There's lots of different calendars, not just the calendar, the Gregorian calendar that we go by. So
correct.
He had his own calendar. Edward Wayne Edwards had his own calendar. But the Gregorian calendar is what these people seem to be going by with a lot of their events and orchestrating their events for our benefit around and the numbers that play into it. So we should be paying attention and be aware that they're doing little secret-coded hand signals between each other, a la the article about Ebola and the 170, which dropped the zero at 17. They're letting you know, we're behind this. We've got the ball here. We're in charge. Don't be afraid. You're one of us. We got your back. This is the game that's afoot. And what I was going to say is just a final thought here, Doug, and then I've got to get into something else. This is important. A lot of people who would like to be the Antichrist, think that they could be the Antichrist, are being foisted upon us as the one that's going to be the Antichrist. It's like a person running for president. Even if everybody likes him, does he have a power base? Does he have the support group? It's not, when you elect a president, you don't just get one person. You get the whole crowd that comes in with them and that makes it possible for them to be in a position to become the president. So with that in mind, there may be a lot of Antichrist figures, but what figure alive today has a power base that crosses the world, every continent? And people that are backing it, whole organizations that hidden and otherwise, the monetary backing, the political backing, the hidden secret handshake backing. And it's the monarchies represented by a single monarchy with the one at the center of it. Because remember, the person who has all the royal bloodlines, the first person to have all the royal bloodlines represented in one person is Prince William. And
that's correct.
He is the 1,000th person to become a member of the Royal Order of the Garter, which is what? The Round Table. He's a member of the Round Table, the Order of the Garter. What are they trying to resurrect? This Atlantean kingdom, this Camelot, if you will, this promised New World Order out of the chaos. So the chaos that's being orchestrated, the chaos that's being put together for our benefit, it will be and is here now, and becoming more and more apparent for chaos. is the precursor to their New World Order and laying the foundation for the one, see, the thousandth night of the round table, drop the zeros. Who is he? The one.
The one.
This is the Masonic Christ. He himself is probably very aware of the designs, machinations, intents. And if anything happens to him, the fallback position is his dad, Charles, who had a lot of 666 stuff in his name and history. They're not even hiding it. They're not even embarrassed by it. In fact, they want you to see all this stuff as though it's a sign from God. Okay, which God? It is a sign from God. Their God. Because they see that they're winning in bringing in this New World Order. They want all of the people to see it. Resistance is futile. You can't stop it. We got this. It's inevitable. And that's part of the message for your audience, Doug, that's so critical. As Christians, we have been programmed to know that the end is coming, the revelation period, it's the end of the world, you can't stop it. No. All of that's true. But it's got some options that happen in there, and we can affect it. We can
Amen.
Change the way it happens, and that's our job, to have an impact on the way this whole thing plays out so that we win according to plan, and we're part of the win. We are not passive observers, and we do not stand idly by while our fellow Abels, our fellow sons and daughters of Adam, our brothers and our sisters, are taken and slain and destroyed in order to pave the way for this Antichrist, these hybrids, win and own the day. What was the whole point of the giants moving into the promised land? While Israel, the seed of Adam, the seed of Abraham, the seed of Isaac and Jacob, got fallow, fat, in the land of Egypt, in slavery, eventually. The children of Cain, the Canaanites, went and occupied the promised land. Why did they do that? Because the devil knew where the salvation was going to come from, knew where the Savior was going to be born, and tried to occupy and block the move of God. And it was the duty of that generation that left Egypt to go in and displace those giants, those Nephilim, that were under a curse, and occupy the land for the arrival of Christ. And when they didn't do it, they died in the desert, save Joshua and Caleb, the only two that came back with a good report. And they went in with the next generation and took the land. There's a whole earth here to be taken. Occupy until I return. That's your job. Don't roll over. Don't say resistance is futile. Don't let them just have it. Where's the resistance? Resist the devil, and he will flee from you. This country's just being given over. And even those people that only want to fight within the Constitution, or I'm going to have a gun, or I'm going to tell this guy, or I'm going to defend my driveway, that's not the way it's going to get won. It's going to get won by a move of the Holy Spirit. It's going to get won
just as it was in the first place. Who came here and occupied the land? The pilgrims. Who followed them and tried to turn it to their own purposes? Those Illuminatus that saw them as a threat. The giants are here. They've shown up. They have their monuments all over the place. The Transamerica building in San Francisco, the Space Needle in Seattle, the Washington Monument, monuments all over the place, the Georgia Guidestones. They're marking your land the same way that they mark your money, with talismans, power from the talismans on the money that you trade with. It's like tattooed. They're tattooing your land for the strength of this spell. To mark it, to own it, like the beasts they are. They're pissing all over your land.
Like
to mark
cat.
Your territory.
Yep.
And we have to stand and occupy in the strength of the Lord, by the word, by our actions. We will not win this by flesh and blood alone. But the promise of salvation is to the flesh and the spirit. It's in the flesh. Their salvation sign is a phallic symbol. Our salvation sign is the cross. Their salvation is your extinction. Their salvation is hybridization. Their salvation is the same as it was. Adam must die and all of his direct seed. Noah must die, and then we've won. We're at that same moment again. This is a Noah moment. We have to survive. If we don't survive, they win. Occupy. It's as simple as that. Survive. Decide you're going to make it. You're going to plan to live. You're going to plan for your neighbor to live. Not about going into your missile silo. As a community, deciding we're not rolling over and we're not giving our country up, and by the power of God Almighty, Constitution and right and the law, we're going to occupy our land and we're not giving up our house. And those deceivers who have taken our land by, you know, fraud, we're going to displace them. We're going to turn them out. We're going to use the law. We're going to own our land again. And by right living, get to the government that you work for, earn, and deserve. I'd say we work for and earned it by default. So how are you going to unearn it? Do the right thing. What exactly does that entail? Better talk to God. That's why we have people like Pastor Langford and Steve and other men of God that come share with us things that we need to know to turn the corner and get on the right path. We displace evil by being light. It's a natural action. Light doesn't have to work to displace darkness. It just has to be there. Occupy. Don't be afraid to say the right thing. Be afraid to be a light in the darkness and say what's supposed to be said. Don't be shut up. Don't be quiet. Don't be under a bushel. Get your light out. Make a difference. Make an impact. Be there at the school board meeting. Amen.
Right on. I couldn't have said it any better. I mean, fantastic as usual.
Wow. Well, I've got something I have to do right now. And
I know you do. I know.
So,
I want to thank you very much.
Station, get in a different position here, and I got to be ready to do that. So, I
I appreciate all of your audience. I hope it wasn't too cumbersome for them and that it makes sense. If there's fish bones in there, just set them on the side of your plate. If there's
right
good
on,
stuff,
brother.
You know, use it. I hope it spurs some good, positive, useful, important discussion. Let's pay attention to the numbers. They're using them. Let's recognize where they're using them, and let's oppose them, and let's not be deceived. We're peeling the curtain back so the wizards can't do the magic act without at least being seen. What happens when a magician does a magic act? If you know how it's done, it's not a mystery. Now it's just a question of how skilled are they in concealing what they're doing. But you realize there's no magic there. It's just straight, you know, it's concealment, the art of deception. But it's not like it's magic. Well, trying to do a magic act and make you think that it's, you know, some, you know, incredible, you know, otherworldly power that allows it. Gosh, it's an art form. It's a skill. They're just very good at it. Don't be fooled. Come on. By the numbers, their wisdom, their machinations, their perfection, it's foolishness before God. Look forward to talking to your folks again sometime soon. Good night, everyone. Thanks for taking a look.
Love you.
Thanks,
W. Thank you, brother. Thank you so much. God bless. Stay safe out there. And folks, that was our Intelligence Insider, W, with some great insight. I just want to toss out a few more things here on the date of Prince William's birth. Air India Flight 403 crashed June 21st, 1982. You want to guess how many fatalities there were? Yeah, 17. Really? And as we had gone through the numbers, William started nursery school when he was 3 years, 3 months, and 3 days old. The thing that got me, Joe, when I was looking at this, and we're going to have a lot more, we're going to talk a lot more about this. This is something that just really made me think. Remember how Revelation 13 talks about the head wound of the Antichrist. Remember that, right? You know about that.
I'm just pulling it up here.
Revelation 13.
Yeah, Revelation 13:3, and I saw one of his heads as it were wounded to death, and his deadly wound was healed, and all the world wondered after the beast.
Okay, and I don't know if this relates or not, but William on June 3rd, 1991, was admitted to the Royal Berkshire Hospital after being accidentally hit on the side of his forehead with a golf club.
Okay.
Now, he didn't lose consciousness or anything, but he did suffer a depressed fracture of the skull and was operated on at the Great Ormond Street Hospital. That resulted in a permanent scar. In fact, in the 2009 interview, he dubbed the scar a Harry Potter scar. He reported to have said, "I call it that because," now listen to this, "it glows sometimes and some people notice it." Okay, other times they don't notice it at all. But think about that.
That's odd.
It's strange.
Side of
okay,
place, big time.
Yeah, and when he was 8 years, 8 months, and 8 days old, he made his first public appearance. You know, and people always talk about the strange death of Diana. She ran into the and W is talking about Osiris, and of course the alternative component to that is the female part, which is often represented by a tunnel. It's interesting that Diana's car hit the 13th pillar of that tunnel. Strange things there as well. Let me just run a few things here. That 5,555 days old on the day of his mother's funeral, that really, can you even calculate that within 20 seconds, man, that's just the convergence of that is incredible. And let me just there's so much more to get into about this, but we had talked about initially, and I was kind of hoping that W would have time to get into this, 44, Obama being 44, coming home for going back to D.C. for 44 hours on the 17th of this month, which is Sunday, 8/17. And then if you take 216 folks, you can do this yourself, and then research this yourself. Take 216 days to and from, we'll say, William's 33rd birthday. And what do you get? Well, what date do you get if you subtract 216 days from William's birthday of June 21st, 2015, when he'll be 33 years old? Let me rephrase that question. On June 21st, 2015, Prince William will be, what, 33 years old? Right. So take 216 days away from that. What date do you get? You get 11/17/2014? I think you do. There's a lot of numbers, a lot of research you can do. And there are a lot of 17s. Like I said, with the Air India flight, 17 fatalities. And if you look at Diana, if you look at the convergence of all the bloodlines, and this is just for research purposes, and people might say, well, you know, why even bother with all of this? Well, it's I do believe that the more we know, the less we'll be fooled. And that's the only reason I'm looking at this. The more we know, the less we will be fooled, or the less chance we'll be fooled. The more we understand, the better we can explain to others about what's really taking place. So when we see headlines, we can kind of understand that there is something behind the headlines. And there's a lot of biblical significance into these numbers, folks, a lot of biblical significance. And I won't get into anything more than that, but just watch the coming days. Watch the numbers. Watch the secret winks and nods and handshakes and acknowledgments.
Pay attention on Sunday, especially what the president's doing. And I think that's key, regardless of
Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday.
Yeah. Because, you know, you don't know. I know golfing is his first and foremost priority over, you know, Commander-in-Chief. So there's got to be something, in my opinion. He doesn't want to come back. He never, this isn't his idea. I bet, you know, somebody said, you got to come back, you got to do this while you're back here. Then you can go back to your golf game.
And to me, this could just very well be like a place marker in time. Do I expect something to happen? I don't know. I don't think so. It doesn't necessarily have to happen. I don't think it necessarily has to happen, but it could be a place marker in time. Whether something happens publicly or privately, who knows? But just pay attention. That's the only thing I'm really saying, pay attention. But boy, we went right over the break on that. Anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, we did. Most of what I've been seeing from people that I know to be not credible, but not complete, you know, idiots either, is that it's going to be some kind of amnesty executive order, which could or could not be. I don't see why that needs a trip back from Martha's Vineyard to complete, if that's the case. Others say it could be something about Ebola, which would make more sense as to why you're coming back, but I don't see why they wouldn't, you know, just have done it. Or why is it timed the way it is, like you say? Why the number of hours? Why coming back on Sunday? If it was an emergency, you'd think you'd be coming back right away. Whatever the emergency was, he would have already been back to deal with it. But it's very, very odd. I don't think we've seen this with him in his presidency. And he's taken lots of vacations and played lots of golf. I saw statistics where he's actually going to outpace a professional golfer, Tiger Woods' amount of golf played during his presidential term. And that professional golfer's time during his presidential term, he's going to outplay a professional golfer in the amount of rounds of golf he's played, which is crazy.
Wow. Okay. That's pretty difficult to do because golfers do this full-time, right? So what you're saying is he's actually doing it as much as a full – he's doing it as a professional almost. Wow, that's just bizarre to me. It really is.
We have calls. We have other news reports. We can
let me just – one more thing real quick here. Remember when I mentioned this past week, Joe, about Bush – accepting what do you call those things? The seal or help me out here, Meshach and Tubal. What was it? He received a scroll. Thank you, scroll. Where he was named Meshach and Tubal, or the king of Meshach and Tubal. Do you remember me talking about this earlier this week?
Yeah, you brought it up. And not to interrupt you here, but it's Obama's one achievement, outgolfing Tiger Woods. Obama is approaching his 200th round of golf since the election. Since January 2009, Tiger Woods, a professional golfer, has played 269 rounds of golf. Sorry for interrupting. Go ahead.
No, keep going.
No, that was all. Just the... over 200 rounds of golf since 2009, and Tiger Woods is a professional golfer. He has been injured, but he's played over 239 rounds of golf in that same time.
Okay, wow.
So
that's crazy. Well, just to close this up, George Bush, when he was president, he was given a scroll, and he was called the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, Ezekiel 38, chapter 38, verse 1, leader of the West. He received a historic document upon his arrival in Jerusalem, calling upon him to choose to be remembered like Cyrus. He was referenced as the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, the leader of the West. The document, grandly transcribed on parchment and furled into a scroll, was addressed to the leader of the West. It reminded President Bush to declare to the world that he will honor God's word and act towards settling the Jewish people throughout their entire land. Now, the document was signed by three people, including the world-renowned Torah scholar, philosopher, social critic, and author, Rabbi, and I can't pronounce his last name. The reason he's significant is he was termed by Time magazine as a once-in-a-millennium scholar. And then there was another rabbi, Richmond, representing the Temple Mount, and Dr. Eshel of the New Jewish Congress. Now, here's kind of what I thought was pretty incredible. According to my research and others, corresponding research, Bush told then-President French Jacques Chirac in early 2003 that Iraq must be invaded to thwart Gog and Magog, the Bible's satanic agents of the apocalypse. Think about that. Think about a top-secret phone call to a major European ally asking for, in fact, in this case, Jacques Chirac, asking for French troops to join American soldiers in attacking Iraq because, well, it's his godly duty. Chirac recounted that the American leader, Bush, appealed to their common faith, obviously Christianity, and told them Gog and Magog were at work in the Middle East and that the biblical prophecies are being fulfilled. This is what I had referenced earlier when I said that there was talk about biblical prophecy at the highest levels of government. This confrontation is willed by God, who wants to use this conflict to erase his people's enemies before New Age begins. Now, this is quite disjointed. This episode happened while the White House was assembling its coalition of the willing. Remember that? to unleash the Iraqi invasion.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. So, I mean, think about that, folks. Now, Chirac did not comply with Bush's request, but nonetheless, we see what happened. And look at what happened with Iraq now, considering the fact that it's fallen to who? What? ISIS.
Can it get any worse?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, but the significance of ISIS, though.
Right. They're renamed. They're revamped. Al-Qaeda 2.0. But the ISIS is a... To me, when that name was given to them, that was just a huge question in my mind, you know. Why? And we've heard to pay tribute to their god. We've heard we've heard a number of things that all make sense. They're all spiritual in nature, and it's not by accident. ISIL was first, and then this is all.
Now it was ISIS, then ISIL, then IIS, and now it's just them.
Right, and the main thing here is that this was all able to happen. This was all allowed to happen. This was all set up to be able to happen by our government. And what we've done in Afghanistan, Iraq, and with the Arab Spring, we've not only are funding them openly now, but we set it up to destroy the powers that were in those countries that were able to stop them before. And we're seeing it play out now, and it's very ugly. I mean, look at the amount of Christians that are being slaughtered. Look at the amount of Christian men that are being slaughtered, and the women and children being kidnapped. The children that are being, cut up, crucified, having their blood drink and their organs eaten. It's just the most evil, fathomable on earth. Just imagine being a Christian living in those areas today.
You know, I'll just say this, and we can take calls the remainder of the show, but I remember being on TBC, Canadian Broadcasting Company. They were down in my office, and I remember spending the entire day with the equivalent of like a 60 Minutes program or a news program for their Sunday nights. And I've got the DVD here somewhere, but I remember...
I remember this. Yeah.
Yeah, it was like 8 hours he was here, and it aired for, I don't know, maybe 15, 20 minutes. But I do recall saying that this was a war between good and evil, meaning Islam and the West, and the fact that this is a religious war or a war between Christianity and Islam, or that's what it would be, Islam and everyone else. And the amount of hate mail that I got from that, from the Canadian listeners and viewers, it was just absolutely incredible. And the Muslims were so offended by what I said. And now look at this.
Well,
I'm not saying, yay me, but...
I heard a commercial today for Coast to Coast earlier this afternoon. It's probably about 2 o'clock, and it's the clip that you're on. That it's a local channel, 1400. It's a AM news station, and they do the advertisement for Coast to Coast, but they play a clip of you talking about not only being concerned about the enemies that are outside of America, but also from the enemies that are within. That's been running now for almost a year and a half, I'd say, on the radio here.
Actually, 3.5 years.
Wow.
3.5 years. So if I got a nickel for every time that was played across the country, boy.
We could have a...
We could have a beach house. But it's a great... from coast to coast. The first time I heard it, I almost like ran my car off the road because I'm like, wow, how'd that happen? But anyway.
Well, let's go to the phones here in the closing 20 minutes that we have. We're going to go to Kevin. Kevin is, him and his brother put together the app for us, and he's been in queue for a long time. Kevin, welcome to the Hagman and Hagman Report.
Wow, 3 hours, I guess. Hey, guys.
How you doing?
Not too bad. Doug?
Speaking.
Good to hear your voice. I talk to your son more than you do.
I
talk
know.
To you.
Yeah. I know.
Hope everything's going great. going to ask you. One question that I hope this doesn't come off as something stupid. If we already won, why do we bother? Why don't we let the chips fall as they may, since we've already won? It's like playing a game of Pokemon. We've already won. Why even go through the steps?
The battle's been won. The overall battle's been won. But each of us individually haven't won yet.
It just seems like everybody is so hell-bent on trying to stop what's inevitably going to happen anyway.
But see, if we can, by fighting, by engaging, if we can add another day, another week, another month of normalcy for our children, where they can experience the playtime, the puppies, the rainbows, the smelling of the flowers, and if we can have just more normalcy, you know, I know that sounds really stupid, maybe, or shallow even, but the fact is, you know, if you could...
I mean, I talked to a lady today who just said she started getting back into her Bible and you know, has a newfound faith for the Lord. And every day that goes by, there's more people like that. And that does buy time.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, plus to save more souls, too. Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
Think how many souls that can be saved in the next 24 hours, 24 months, 24 years even, you know? I mean, who knows how long we've got. If we save one,
mine.
Is it worth? Well, great.
Yeah,
great.
You guys are instrumental. Instrumental, well, not just me, just me and everybody else that listens to your show. I'm over down here in Houston, where, man, you're getting quite a name down here. We love it. And we're glad that we were able to boost Hagman and Hagman everywhere. Now I need some bumper stickers and some stuff to hand out to everybody, and we'll be in business.
I'll tell you what, I'm going to send you some down there, my friend. I guarantee you. In fact, I'll get your – if you want to – do we have their address? I've got your address, don't I?
Yeah, you've got his info.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, we'll send some down for you. All right, buddy. Yeah.
All right, guys. Have a good night.
All right. Thanks for holding, Kevin.
Thanks, man. Sorry about the long wait.
No, dude, that was a great show. I can listen to NW for, I mean, him and V forever.
Yeah, they're just V will be on Monday, by the way.
Oh, and yesterday, Nathan Leal? Wow. What else can you say? Wow.
Yeah.
Do you ever wonder how these people like that with so much information sleep at night, like Dave Hodges? Like, how do they even go to bed knowing what they know?
I know.
And he doesn't even tell us all that he knows. He probably gives us, what, 10% of what he can actually tell us? Him and Dave Hodges and, who's one, one of my favorite, the ex-CIA guy that's always on. I can't believe I'm forgetting his name right now.
Tosh Plumley, perhaps, or Kevin,
no, the
Kevin
older,
Shipp?
No, the other gentleman who's always on. I'm not
Jim Garrow.
Jim Garrow, yeah. Imagine what that guy knows.
Yeah, it's amazing how many people. Yeah, it's and I got to tell you, I've the off-air conversations I've had and the face-to-face meetings I've had. I'll just say this, Kevin, and to the audience. You know, some people might say, "Oh, W, you know, he's not real, or he doesn't have the real cred, street creds." Let me tell you something. From what I've seen, physically seen, what he's shown me, scared. I shouldn't say scared, but, well, yeah, in a way.
No,
it's
should. That's a perfect word.
I've got to say that seeing what I saw, I felt like, boy, I shouldn't be looking at this. And, you know, you start looking around over your shoulder because, man, you know, this is not something you would ordinarily see. And I'm talking about photographs and some other items
that are not
ordinarily, you know, wow.
Can I? May I pay you a compliment, Doug?
Sure.
I don't know if you're going to remember. My first time I called in last year sometime, I told you that one of the things that you did that drives me nuts is when you're just about to tell us something, you stop and say, that's all I can say about that. And I remember telling you sometimes I want to pull over the side of the road screaming, no, that's what we listen to you for because we want to hear that. And I remember you said you were going to make a conscious effort not to do that so much. And I got to tell you, you don't really do that much anymore. I think, of course, things have changed a lot in the last year, but you're just spilling the beans now.
Well, Kevin, thank you very much. And I got to tell you, I'm not a professional radio host. I've got so many faults that, I mean, my wife sometimes can't even stand to listen to me, okay? However, I am trying to get better in certain things that I do. So thank you for that, my friend. Appreciate
You're
it.
A professional inspirer.
Well, thanks. I really do appreciate that. And you're a consummate professional in terms of technology. The stuff you've done for us has just been absolutely incredible. Hopefully, Kevin, our app is really taken off or, you know, consistently growing.
Oh, it has.
Growing.
Oh, and if I may just take one more second, I put my phone number in the chat room, my personal cell phone number, so people can call me if they have problems, and nobody has abused it. But boy, some of the characters that just called me out of the blue, you know, they're so apologetic. There's this one person from Wisconsin, and Steve Quayle had sent me his books for free without me even asking him, and I remember talking to her about it, and I didn't know what to do with those books until she called me, and I knew exactly what I was supposed to do with those books. And I told her on the spot, I said, now I know what I'm supposed to send these books to. Because I knew I was supposed to pay them forward, but I just wasn't sure who to. But boy, it hit me like a ton of bricks as soon as I heard this woman's voice on the phone. So yeah, I'm shipping those to her this week. But it's just, everything happens for a reason, and I'm convinced that way. And this app's happened. I listen to you guys for everything's happening according to his plan.
Indeed, indeed. Well, thank you so much, my friend. God bless
you. Okay, guys. Yes, sir.
Thanks, buddy.
Bye.
Joe, Kevin is I'll tell you, what a great app, but what a great service he provides. And,
yeah, absolutely.
I love it, man. And I'm not a tech guy, and if I can navigate through that on my wife's phone, she did show me how to do it. Pretty simple.
Well, let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to area code 253 next. 253, you're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report. What's on your mind tonight?
Well, let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to area code 253 next. 253, you're live on the Hagman and Hagman Report. What's on your mind tonight? Well, let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to area code 253.
Ooh, a little bit of echo. Double echo. Triple echo. 253, you there?
Hey!
Jack!
Hey, you guys. What's going on, man?
I'm hearing voices in my head, Jack.
Yeah, that's me.
Hey, guys.
Can you turn that radio off or your computer down?
Yeah, I know. I'm trying to get it turned down right now. Hang on.
Boy, I thought I was confused before.
There we go. Okay.
All right, that's better. All right, Jack.
Hey. I fell asleep on you guys, man. I just woke up, man, just about a half a minute ago.
Well, that's really a great advertisement for the show.
I can't believe I did that, man. Just fell
asleep.
Well, you must
have been tired.
I don't know, man. Anyway, I can.
Well,
good thing about it is I can always go back. You know, I can always go
right.
back and catch the parts that I missed.
That's right. You got anything on your mind tonight?
I think I've actually been asleep for about an hour, maybe. I don't know.
A W lulled you to sleep. How's that? The W,
wow.
W, if you're listening.
Wow.
You
did.
Anything on your mind?
W did it. It was W. No, I'm joking. I'm joking. No, I'm, wow, I didn't expect to get on, to be on tonight. I don't know. I called in early, but, everything's going okay. Things are better. You know, the fear factor that it was going on with me, I've overcome I call it the fear factor. I've overcome it and I'm doing much better. So,
that's great to hear.
Yeah.
And you keep both feet firmly planted on the ground. Folks, Jack and your dog Taco, right?
Yeah, Taco.
Yeah. All right. You know, look, faithful listeners to our program, and that's the thing. We try to fight against people. We try to fight against the fear element, the element of fear, because that's so destructive. We know bad times are coming. We have to just learn how to handle it. Jack, you're a marvelous picture of an illustration of that. I just want to thank you for helping others along the way. We know you do through your actions and through your, you know, hanging in there kind of thing.
Yeah, and if I can, if you don't mind sharing on the air, Jack, what helped you get through that fear aspect? Was it the prayer? Was it?
It was prayer
reading?
And prayer, fasting, and just believing, you know, and just knowing that you know, there's nothing I could do that I can change to this, you know. It was like the things that are coming are going to come, and there's nothing that I can do to change that. You know, I have my mind and my heart, and they both have to be in sync together. You know what I'm saying? Does it make sense? You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, okay, so...
very well said.
That's just where I came to. That's what I came to, the conclusion in prayer and telling God, hey, I don't want to feel like this. You know, I just don't want to keep feeling this. This is not right. And I got through it, you know? And now... You know, I think I know that I'm okay in this area right now. So,
well, Jack, keep both feet firmly planted on the ground. Keep listening. Try to stay awake. And at least you're driving.
Sorry about that.
All right, brother. You take care. We're gonna cut you loose.
God bless you guys.
Have a great day.
Have a good weekend, Jack.
Yes, sir.
Okay,
and you folks,
too.
Don't forget. Don't forget, tomorrow night we've got Gerald Celeni on, we've got Chuck Baldwin, and we will have
Ben Swan.
Yeah, this is going to be an incredible program tomorrow night with Sheila Zelensky, the Weekend Warrior. I just can't wait for that.
I mean, that's just that's three shows in one. I mean, they really should be three separate shows, but that's just fantastic work by Sheila, and I know you and that's just going to be a great show. We're going to get one more phone call in here at least. Area code 509, we're going to come to you next. You're live on the Hagman & Hagman Report. Thanks for holding. What's on your mind tonight?
Good evening, Doug. Good evening, Joe. I look at Scripture, and I think it kind of shows us what numbers mean, but we gotta take a lot in sometimes and just see what we see. In Genesis 17, Abraham is told to circumcise, so there's an idea of cutting off. In 1 Samuel 17, we see David behead Goliath, the cutting off. In Revelation 17, we see Babylon being cut off. And we also see that again in Jeremiah 51, which is 3 times 17. And it's not a way of predicting anything. It's just noticing what's there. And mm-hmm. I think we've been called to bear witness with what the Creator is showing us. And the people who want to calculate, they always exhibit that alchemical spirit of a magician. And you can hear it in their voice when they talk, like when they promise you change, they want to turn lead into gold, right? But they never do. And the ones they're really helping out are themselves. And when we contrast that spirit with his spirit, we see it in Romans 1 and 2. Romans 1, it talks about people like to change the truth into a lie. In Romans 2, it talks about a patient farmer who waits until the harvest comes in. But there's judgment when it comes in. And we're supposed to be like the latter. We're supposed to sow in faith, reap in due time, and have that faith and testify of what we see him doing. But if we get to the point where we want to calculate everything ahead of time and use it for our own advantage and put a feather in our hat, we're probably going to get in trouble with him.
Yeah.
I mean, very anything, well said.
Yeah, any scriptures, you know, when people read the Bible for fueling an argument or their side of an argument, it's the same thing. You're not going to get out of it what you intend to. And you're right. You're exactly right, caller.
I think we just have to look and see what he does and, again, testify of it. When we look at scripture closely, we see in Exodus 15, there's the coming out in the Red Sea, and we see Pharaoh and his armies cut off. But in Genesis 15, Abraham received the covenant of promise. In Exodus 12, it says it was exactly 430 years to the day from Abraham receiving the promise to Pharaoh and his armies getting cut off. Then in Revelation 15, we see they sing the song of Moses and the song of the Lamb. So this number 15 is speaking about redemption. It's speaking about a feast day,
right.
A biblical feast day. It's speaking about everything related with the number 15. And some people might want to view that as being Kabbalistic, and I suppose it can be viewed that way if people want to use it for their own purposes. But when we just do what he tells us to do, can any man make a more intricate watch than the Creator can make his creation? No.
No.
So
no.
So we have to look at him, give him his due, and see what he's doing, not try and use it always for our own advantage.
It's very well said. And you know, about numbers, there are numbers, biblical numbers, divine numbers, of course, and then there are the opposite, the counterfeit numbers, the satanic numbers, the ones that are, you know, opposing, shall we say, the divine numbers. So, interesting, very interesting observations, all of them. God bless you, my friend. We're up against the end of the program already. Unbelievable. I want to thank you for the call. Joe, it's been a fabulous follow-up Friday. And,
yeah,
just
and
say,
don't forget this weekend with Sheila Zielinski and
right.
Gerald Talente, Ben Swan, and then Chuck Baldwin, all his guests on Saturday.
Right.
Monday, Steve Quayle and V will be on. So you guys aren't going to want to miss that one either. And we have a great lineup for next week. Paul McGuire will be on, Greg Jackson, Brother Marcus, Stan Deo, V and Steve. Thanks.
Our entire lineup is on HagmanandHagman.com. Folks, bookmark that, HagmanandHagman.com, our entire lineup, along with photographs and some other things. We are going to be expanding that, the audio clips and so on. So just keep an eye on that. God bless you, my friends.
Thanks for joining us, everybody. Have a great weekend. God bless and stay safe.